You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
Yeah! What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, May 24th, 2023, and I'm your old pal, Joey OB.
And I'm Troy, ready to hit the friendly skies, La Valley.
Ready to hit the friendly skies. I heard a dirty rumor in the offices, the new studio of the Glass Cannon Network yesterday. And that rumor is that Troy La Valley is flying economy to St. Paul.
It's coach, first of all. I would never fly basic economy. I would just walk to the destination, but it was a tricky airplane situation. I wanted to get into St. Paul with the day to enjoy myself. By enjoy myself, I mean stress out over the St. Paul show. And there was only one fucking flight, and it's a long story. But I was like, you know what? I'm gonna ride the snake here and see if I get the gold medallion upgrade. So I'm still feeling pretty confident. I don't have to slum it with the poor.
Slum it with the rest of us poors. For the record, we all fly coach to every show, but Troy always seems to get an upgrade.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Points, man. I'm going to refer my Amex card to you, because if you sign up, we both get miles. And then if you get this card, dude, it's going to change your life, man. Just put everything on it.
I know. I have to, but I, like... we've gone through this. It's a long story.
I know. Well, you're tired because you're flying out of the worst airport in America, and you're like, you can never fly the same type of flight. Like when you go visit your in-laws, it's Southwest, but when you're doing this, you'd love to take Delta, but you know, can't always. So you just gotta kind of start over, man. You gotta start over.
It really feels like Newark Airport runs about 4 to 5 total Delta flights out of it in a day, which is just staggering.
Comedian Jeff Ross used to say, Newark Airport is the Newark of airports.
Oh, man. It's a good one. But I'll tell you what. What it lacks in awesomeness, it makes up for in convenience.
Because it's
just right there, which is so nice.
How long is your, like, door-to-door?
16 minutes.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's insane. So what are you, like an hour and 50 minutes to get to JFK?
Well, you know what's funny, dude? When I lived in Astoria, if I was flying out of LaGuardia, when I had like clear pre-check and, sky medallion, whatever, I could be door to gate in 12 fucking minutes. It was insane. Like, no exaggeration, gate.
It was a 5-minute drive from our old apartments to LaGuardia.
All right, so to give you an idea, so LaGuardia, it was that close to Astoria. JFK in a lift was an hour, and if I wanted to take the train, it would be like 2 hours because you got to go all the way to one part of Queens and the way out, switch the air train. Now where I live, it's an hour to LaGuardia and an hour to JFK, and it makes no sense to me.
Really?
I've looked at a map and I'm like, yeah, it's a triangle, I see it, but I'm like, how does this work? And I say an hour, it ends up being like an hour and a half, depending on when I leave.
An hour and a half. I mean, that's a long commute to an airport, especially on the way home. Like when you've landed and then you have another hour and a half.
Oh, it's always the worst. Yeah. Brutal. Especially when we come across country, like back from LA a couple weeks ago, and then we landed, I think, and I just was driving home in rush hour, and I'm like, I this is the worst. I just want to see my family, and I just sit in a car.
You have to fly another connection right. back to your house, basically. Well, you make up for that by always flying first class. You son of a bitch.
It's just not true. You gotta game the system, man. Systems are there to be gamed, and you of all people should know that.
Absolutely. Speaking of which, we are going to get into it today, including some exciting game design talk. I nerded out last week. I'm about to nerd out again this week on the Wounded Condition.
Wounded!
Get ready for it. I'm excited to talk Wounded in We Are Stupid. But before that, we've got a lot of news. We're getting on flights. We're headed out to St. Paul. We've got an exciting fan event we want to talk about there. We've got an huge studio update. We were at the studio yesterday with the whole team. And we've got even more Gen Con updates. We told you the shows were about to go up for sale. Well, they went up for sale. We've got news on that and updates there. So lots to head in, lots to get into. Let's kick it off with this weekend. We fly out today to St. Paul, and show is tomorrow night. Cannot wait to get back to the St. Paul crowd. Love that crowd.
Yeah.
Some awesome of our most hardcore community members, our mods, the people that help us the most are all going to be there. It's just such a warm and welcoming environment. I cannot wait to be there and see some of my favorites from the niche. Great venue. It's Amsterdam Beer Hall, right? Or Amsterdam Hall and Bar. Hall and Bar. So excited to be back there. It just, that place reminds me of some of my favorite places I would go to in like my early 20s to see like cover bands. See like a good 90s cover band where it's still just a bar, but it's big enough that like you can put a live event or live show up there and it's a blast, but it's not a venue per se. It's still just a bar. You know,
it feels like the nicest bar in Brooklyn.
Yes. It's like Brooklyn Bowl without assholes or bowling.
And that was Sydney's first weekend with us last year because we did Milwaukee and then we drove to St. Paul. And I remember somebody from the Nash hooked us up with some nice beers and then we had Michael send them to us in the office. Like we had all those beers that we couldn't drink because people will bring us 20 10 percenters. And we're like, well, we can't drink all of these before the show or any of them. But we don't want to waste them. It was always great, like when someone would give us beer at the beginning of PaizoCon weekend, because we'd like, we can drink this all weekend long.
Yeah, that would be the best. Like if it would be great if we were doing like a two show weekend in the same city, but that's, or if we're driving from one to the other. But when we got to get right back on a flight, it's like, it's a little bit tougher to carry all those 20, 10 percenters.
If you're still on the fence about coming out, or if you're like, I don't know if I can party hard on a Thursday night, there's only 30 tickets left at the time of this recording. Last year we sold it out. That's all I'm saying. 30 tickets. I feel like we can do that. I feel like there are 30 more people out there. Maybe you're already coming and you've got a couple friends who have no idea who we are, but you know, because you're a member of the Nash, if they just come and see us, they're going to fall in love. It's going to be such a good time. Get those last 30 sold, and then maybe we'll come back next year.
Plus, we have a fantastic community event coming up. This is spearheaded by our community manager, McD, who many of you have come to know and love. He has headed this up with Michael, our production coordinator, who will be there in person because Michael is a Minneapolis-based member of the Nash. We're hosting a Nash meetup at Level Up Games in St. Paul on Friday, the 26th at 10:30 in the morning, Central Time. We're going to be hanging. We're going to be flying to Asheville, but the Minneapolis St. Paul community is going to be hanging out, playing games for just a few hours. You can find out more by visiting our new Travelog forums on the official Discord, where you can make plans to meet up with fellow members of the Nash around our live shows, or even find travel partners or somebody to split a hotel room with when you're coming to a Glass Cannon live show. So we've set up this new spot on our official Discord called the Travelog, right? Whatever it is.
Yeah, I was talking to McD for a while, and McD was chatting with the mods about what to do. So I launched these channels last week. We did channels first, and then K-Rob and Jen were like, you guys should try the forums. It's kind of like, as I alluded, I was like, it's like Reddit, but it's not a dumpster fire. And so each city that we visit will have its own forum. And then if you click on that city, you'll see a bunch of different topics that are all tagged, like meetups, good places to eat, good places to get beer, random stuff, and maybe free tickets, people giving away tickets or selling tickets, selling VIP tickets. So as we announce the rest of the cities for the tour, because we've got shows coming up in September, October, December, we'll make new channels for those as well. And it's just a great way to kind of foster community, because after we finish St. Paul and Asheville, these channels I'll leave them up so that people can like get to, maybe you met somebody at the show or you're like, who is that handsome fellow three rows ahead? You could be like, misconnection. Maybe we could hang out and play sex sometime. Please don't do that on our Discord, but maybe you'll find a friend, if nothing else, to game with.
I mean, I love the idea of finding a travel partner or splitting hotel rooms. Like, that to me is just like the way to go. I mean, save money and hang out with somebody else who's, you know, a like-minded member of the niche. You know, I mean, it's just a great, great place to kind of do those meetups. So use the Discord for that. Let's move it to the studio.
Wait, what about Asheville? We didn't talk about Asheville. We kind of just talked a lot of St.
What
Paul
about
and Discord.
Asheville. There's a show there. Tickets are on sale. We've
are
said this every week for 19 weeks.
Yeah, we know we're not going to sell that out.
Honestly, I'm kind of upset. Because I'm upset because I just look at the schedule and I see that I won't have 1 minute to see Nashville or Asheville rather. And I'm so bummed because like I've looked forward to going to Asheville for a decade or more. Like I had friends that like either grew up around there or went there to visit or whatever. And we're like, Asheville's amazing. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, we're not going to arrive in Asheville until the evening. And then the next day is show day and we have to be in the venue by 7 a.m. It's going to be miserable.
It's just not true. We're all, so basically, as I laid it out to the team about a month and a half ago, I'm like, here are our options. You can fly direct from St. Paul to Asheville, and it will cost us around $1,200 a ticket, so please don't choose that option. Also, that option is not available. We can fly, if you want to fly American to Asheville, I think there's a flight that leaves later that night, but you're going to miss the whole day. Or you can take an afternoon flight to Charlotte and drive at your leisure to Asheville, or you can get up at 5 in the morning after the St. Paul show. We can take a 7 a.m. flight to Charlotte, and then I've rented us a Dodge minivan. We're going to be driving from Charlotte to Asheville. We'll get there in the afternoon, man. We're going to have the whole day to beer it up in Beer City. I'm excited. It's going to be great.
Well, and, I don't want to poo-poo your excitement, but I just... don't think it's going to happen. I think we're going to get there much later than you think. In fact, I actually have to look into this.
You think it's going to be like the Nashville to Atlanta drive from hell?
Nothing could be that bad.
We're driving into like
nothing could be
backwoods country.
I'm certainly excited to do the Asheville show. I'm just bummed that I'm not going to see more of that. I don't have like a day or two to just like chill in Asheville. But yeah, Asheville will be there, and that's Saturday night. We'll be in Asheville. So.
Yeah, tickets still available. I mean, I'm very happy with the sales. You know, I don't think we can visit Asheville every single year, so all the more reason to come on out. I think it's going to be a rowdy, fun Saturday night crowd at the Gray Eagle.
Studio update. We made big strides yesterday. We're closing in on the final moments. I think that we are like, what would you say, one, maybe two visits max away from recording Gatewalkers in terms of our time in the studio. We're just about there. We're so close. We were in yesterday all day and had the whole cast there, the whole team, and we were testing and shooting all day long, and it looks great. And it sounds great. And it's so close. I'm so excited.
Yesterday was a big day, right? Because like it was the first day we were all going to get in there together. Sydney and Kate hadn't even seen the space yet. And Matthew and Skid had popped in and out here and there. You've obviously been there a ton. And you and I have been there a few times. I mean, Francis and CJ are in there almost every day now. And then Matt, our cinematographer, like to get everybody who's going to be working on the show. McD came up from Philly in the room together. I was like, this is an invaluable day, even if we don't get any technical stuff done. But we had that and we got a ton of technical work done, really starting to look at what the space is going to look like, see if my fucking cockamamie artistic ideas would actually work in execution and to see what it would be like with a flow, like, all right, let's just pretend that they were recording. And then we've got the roaming camera. How does it look with the switching to multiple cameras? I mean, we've got like, I think all told, there'll be around 8 cameras in there, or 7 or 8 cameras. Like there's just a lot that's going into this. And then like, how does the audio sound? Of course, we've got audio problems. So after 9 or so hours in there yesterday, I feel like, you know, we've still got a ways to go. I think you say 1 or 2 more visits. I think that's pretty accurate. Those are full day visits. But yesterday just, it felt like, it felt super real. And also it felt like it's exceeding my expectations on what, you know, what I had in mind and what we had in mind for this. Just seeing like the test footage, I was like, holy shit, there is nothing like this out there right now.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I there's really not much more we can say except just know that it's imminent. The beginning of recording in earnest and shooting is imminent in the next couple weeks. So we're really, really looking forward to getting that rolling. Let's do a quick Gen Con update before we get to We Are Stupid. Juicy We Are Stupid this week. Let's do some Gen Con updates. We've got two shows that are happening at Gen Con. We mentioned this last time. They're on sale right now. Yeah, the events at the con. The events are all up at Gen Con. If you want to come by and see us play Blades in the Dark live, the Busted Mufflers back in action, or if you want to see us play Modern Cthulhu live again, guess what? You're not the only one. Tickets are flying. I was really pleasantly surprised. They're selling faster than our tour sells.
Well, because the tickets are like $14.
Yeah. And they are going fast. So, I mean, Modern Cthulhu is like on a sellout pace in the next week or so.
Right. So Modern Cthulhu is happening at 11 a.m. on Friday, I believe. And it's a 250-seat theater in the convention center. There's only 52 tickets left as of the time of this recording. So by the time you are listening to this, there'll probably be 40-something left. So that show is going to sell out. And as far as I know, that show is not being streamed. So it will only exist forever in that room. And then Blades in the Dark, the Busted Mufflers is happening Saturday at 5 p.m. And I believe it's in the Westin. It might even be in the same room that we did last year. I am not sure that that's being streamed. If it isn't, then that's the only place you're going to see it is in that room, because we're not bringing our camera crew into the Gen Con shows. We don't own that. Gen Con owns that. However, that's a 400-seat theater, and it's already half sold, already 200 tickets sold. We expect that one to sell out as well. So please, don't hesitate. Grab those tickets, because they will be gone. Certainly Modern Cthulhu will be gone by the end of the week. I wouldn't be shocked.
And then we also mentioned that we're doing two shows outside of the con. Glass Cannon Live, as always, Helium Comedy Club. Cannot wait to get back there. And that is selling like hotcakes. Is VIP sold out?
VIP is not sold out, but I feel like I looked at the tickets.
Single digits?
11 VIPs left. So, yeah,
let's call that single digits.
I mean, amazing sales right out the gate for both Glass Cannon Live, which is going to be happening Thursday night, which I believe is August 3rd, back at Helium Comedy Club. This is where we perform now several times. That show will sell out. And then the next night, we're doing a new show. I think that's August 4th, Friday night at the Athenaeum. It's going to be Call of Cthulhu live. I mean, that's going to be so exciting. And again, that's a much bigger theater, but the tickets are only $15. You can buy premium seating if you want for, I think, $55, but $15 to get in. That's the show where we want the Naish to come out and bring their friends who have no fucking idea who we are, or the friends who don't want to spend $40 on a Glass Cannon Live ticket. We really want that to be kind of a slap your nuts on the table. Hey, here we are with a Glass Cannon. If you don't like this, you're not going to like anything we do.
Yeah, I mean, because it's all new. It's all original. It's all original in the sense that it's you don't have to have seen anything before. It's a standalone show at the Athenaeum in Indy on Friday night, August 4th, for $15. Definitely try to get in on that. We've never done anything like this. So yeah. It's going to be amazing.
I cannot wait. Too.
Big yeah, cast. Exactly. Big cast. I mean, it's going to be wild.
It's going to be stupid. And Chaosium's fired up about it, you know, because I'm trying to decide what I want to do, both because I'm going to be running the Modern Cthulhu game and I'm going to be running the show at the Athenaeum. So I'm trying to decide what scenarios I want to do, because I got to keep it around 2 hours, which with us is a nightmare. We can't even do character creation in under 2.5. So Chaosium sent me some sort of advanced copies of things that haven't been printed yet I'm reading. And then I'm reading some other stuff that I think probably a lot of people know, but I'm sure we'll give our own twist to. So, I'm excited, but I have to get through St. Paul and Asheville and Gatewalkers. Then I can start thinking about the 15 shows that I'll be running at Gen Con.
Yes, but we wanted to give you guys the heads up on this as soon as possible, because we're pleasantly surprised, but not surprised, I should say. We're very happy with how they're selling. We're just pleasant with how they're selling. But we want you to know now so that you don't miss out if you do want to come to one of these shows, because they are selling fast. We've never done a $15 ticket show, and we've got, you know, a couple of them in Indy this time. So definitely check it out and see if you can come and see us live. All right, let's bring it over to We Are Stupid, episode 76 of Strange Aeons. Had plenty of fodder to work with, because it was, you know, another deep combat as we continued the fight against the Umbral Dragon. And Professor Eric did a fantastic job, as he always does, of digging into every little thing, including pointing out right out of the gate, I feel like I said this in the episode, and either he's wrong or you're wrong. I must be right. He says the dragon didn't spend an action to fly. I knew there was a round where I even asked you about it, and you said something, and I was like, yeah, that sounds right.
I can't remember what I said. Yeah. It doesn't seem like Professor Eric remembers either.
Well, he just pointed it out as if, you know, we should probably know this like easily. And if I would have been able to re-listen to the episode, I would have, but I wasn't able to this week. But yeah. So you need to spend an extra hover.
Yeah.
We just always have to keep that in mind and always just kind of remember that.
We took it for granted, dude, in first edition, because flying was kind of like, and I fly 15 feet up, you know, and you had to roll those checks, but we hand waved a lot of checks. They've simplified flying, I think, in 2E, and so we have to be a little bit more mindful of it. And as I spend more time with the rule book in preparation for Gatewalkers, I'm reading over these checks again. I'm like, oh, fuck, dude. This is stuff that I know going into the episode, and then I start doing it, and I just forget that I have to do that. So you can call me out on it. And just like I would allow you to be like, all right, just don't use that action. You're going to use a hover. You know, I'm going to do the same thing as well. But, you know, also things like flying up and at a 45 degree angle, you move at half speed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something I don't think we paid a lot of attention to.
Well, we don't do a lot of 3D gaming on our maps. And because it's an enormous pain in the ass. But right. You can't have it both ways. You can't like both make it as realistic and, you know, on the rules as possible and be like, you know, complain that it's taking too long. Like, it's like you either do it one way or you don't. And because we always like to say we like it to feel real. We like it to feel like it's really happening. Like if I'm 15 feet up in the air, that matters. Well, if that's the case, then you got to track that and you got to do it by the book, you know?
Yeah, I wonder why. And correct me if I'm wrong, but why Paizo hasn't like said, here's how you do with it. Yeah, I feel like we're all just sort of lean on Pythagoras, but I've never seen them give a solution for it. Even in the book, I think there's like a little box that's like, now you got to deal with three-dimensional stuff. Good luck. But like they don't, why not just say like, if someone's 15 feet up and 10 feet over, you add them together and divide by two or something like that. Like we rely on Pythagoras because it's accurate, but it's a pain in the ass. I wish there was just like a shorthand rule for it. And if there is, please correct me, but because I've read the book now. Like I really don't see it.
The reason is because it is so highly specific to every situation that it's hard to have a general rule besides Pythagoras. Cause like think about Giant Slayer, right? So Metra's flying. One of the chief things that would give me that I would eye roll and I would want to flip my table over because I'd be like, just continue the episode. Like it was killing me was like Metra's flying 45 feet in the air. Metra wants to cast some whatever touch spell on a frost giant. The other thing that we would get into, and this even came up in 2E and Strange Islands, if I'm not mistaken, like in one of the Dreamlands fights, was like, okay, do you have the range with Pythagoras to get there? Oh, you're this far away, you're this high up. Oh, but exactly how tall is the giant?
Yeah.
And then you're like, because if the giant is 11 feet tall, that means that you get another 10 feet of forgiveness on that Pythagoras. And it's like,
yeah, that's true. That's true.
It's annoying and it drags the game to a halt. So like, there's no way you can make a rule hard and fast that you could just apply to any of those situations besides the Pythagorean theorem.
Subtract like the height of the creature, unless they're tall for their age, in which case
right,
you
exactly.
multiply by six. Yeah, it really is.
I don't know. The solution is kind of like, can I hit him?
Yeah, sure.
Exactly. Flying has always been a part of the game. I think that it's more important to track, to limit flying movement by moving by half when you're going up. I think that's a good rule to stick to and to matter than it is to like care that much about Pythagoras. Like if they're up 15, 20 feet in the air and they're 30 feet away and they're casting a 30 foot spell, I'm just like, fine, just go ahead. Just cast it because I'm tired of nitpicking right. that kind of stuff. But it is hard. Like I understand why, because you also have an enormous advantage being 30 feet in the air.
Yeah.
You know, it can't hit you the same way maybe, or it can't even attack you with melee. So like you have this huge advantage. You should have to be closer or something, but it's really about the player keeping themselves honest there to just be like, all right, well, I got to fly in a little closer to do this. How close do we need to be that precise? No. Just kind of move a little closer. I don't know. But that's the way that I would run it in that game. I'd keep it very loose.
Loosey-goosey.
So another thing that Eric brought up is a reminder, just a reminder that when you use the capital E escape action, you can use athletics, acrobatics, or unarmed attack. It seemed to Eric in the listening of the episode that Aldo felt a little like, well, my athletics is terrible, I can't do this. But being a high dex character, he probably has a decent acrobatics. Maybe he never put any training into it, so maybe it's not good, but he should just know that he can use acrobatics for that escape just as well as he can use athletics, and you can use unarmed attack. He said he also felt like the hazard should probably have things like an AC, HP, and hardness. Most of them do. So that if you want, you could just hack at the belts or, you know, whatever was holding him, and you can try to do it that way. He doesn't think that that's like a legitimate way strategically to do it, but you do have that option.
Yeah. And, you know, I feel like I may have alluded to it. I may have said it very, you know, sort of quickly, because I don't want to tell you, like, here are your options. I want you to ask me, hey, can I attack it? And be like, yeah, sure, try it. But yeah, I do have an AC. It has a fortitude save, a reflex save. It has a hardness, a break threshold, hit points, and everything.
Awesome. He did say, Professor Eric did say that you mentioned acrobatics later on Eris's turn as an option to get out. So he says, it sounds like Troy's aware of it, but it seemed that we all just kept forgetting on Aldo's turn to be like, hey, you know, you have other options. But
yeah, and whatever you used, it still has the attack trait. So that's important.
Yeah. But then once the dragon got in range, it was, you know, Aldo could just throw a bomb. So it really wasn't hurting him all that bad. But it is something, you know, that we got to deal with now as we head into St. Paul. You know, we got to figure out, like, are these things just going to drop us? You know what I mean? Or are we going to have to help each other get out? Like, what are the next steps of this? Just because the dragon's down doesn't mean we're necessarily out of the woods yet.
Oh, dude, also, I'm glad you mentioned that, because, like, I don't remember the episode. So, like, I can't even remember where we're at. I have to listen to the end of it before I, you know, start finish my prep for the show.
Do they allow you to listen to podcasts in coach?
You know what? I don't know. Probably only like podcasts by Bill Gates, Tony Robbins. Why I created those two. But I need to listen to the end, because I would have just like automatically started saying stuff to you that you, I guess you shouldn't know yet. So I'm glad you
mentioned. Professor Eric pointed out something that is just, it's just funny. He says, for Ethel, it would take one action to pick up each weapon and then another action to stand. So basically a full round just to get up and be armed from being unconscious and dying. You, I believe in the episode, hand waved it. You were like, yeah, because Matthew said something like, do I need like an action to pick up these weapons? You were like, just get up. It's fine. And I thought that that was a fine ruling, but he just pointed it out. Like, it would get down to, if you wanted to get into the nitty gritty, an action for each weapon and then an action for standing. So this came up in Blood of the Wild in, because I have a dual wielding ranger, and Jared made the ruling that he's fine with me using one action for draw and one action for sheathing, as opposed to one for each weapon. I mean, one for each weapon, it kills your round. It kills your round because it's just like draw, move. You can't even attack. You know what I mean? You're just like, you're putting yourself in risk and you haven't done anything yet. So he was like, it's fine. I think if you're trained in dual wielding, that means you can pull out two weapons in an instant. Scoop, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Like when you really get into the nitty gritty of the rules, I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, which I've said a few times already this episode, that's like my safety net, because I'm not, I'm feeling more confident, but I don't want to speak with Joe O'Brien confidence.
Joe O'Brien confidence, where you don't know what you're talking about.
Right, and you're completely wrong. And you're face plant. But,
dude, I think that's like, how they train you in debate club, okay? They just say, whatever you're saying, just say it like it's the facts.
Let's say you have something in your backpack that you want to use, and it's in combat. Like, the first action is to open your bag or something, and then the second action is to retrieve it. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like, if you want to get something out of your bag, it's like two actions, isn't it?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but yeah, it's something like that. Yeah.
It's like you have to like get your bag is one action, and then like reach into it is the second, and then drink the potion. You know, that's why it's better just like, I have a potion on my belt. Okay. That's only one action to, well, actually I wonder, even if it's on your belt, it's probably one action to retrieve it and a second action to drink it.
Yes. Yeah, I believe so. I believe the alchemist has an ability that makes that one action. But I think that like in general, potions are, it's like it's an interact action to pull it out. And I think it's an interact action to drink a potion, you know, to draw it and drink it, which, you know, that's fine by me. I think that that's reasonable.
potion was in your bag, I think it takes three actions to do that.
Yeah.
Get the bag, retrieve it from the bag, drink it, third action.
Well, that's something that we don't do, and it's something that's just wild to me. Like, really, we're going to sit down and be like, okay, where are each of your potions? I'm sorry, you can only keep two on your belt.
According to your character art, I don't see any potions on your belt.
According to your character art, which is canon. Yeah, that's a tricky one. I mean, this is goes back to Jade Regent, even when I loved tracking like my gear and being really detailed about it. And I would like separate things off into like backpacks and stuff like that. I would do that because I just enjoyed it. I would never like have that affect me in combat. I would still just pull out whatever I needed. Now that was rare that you would need something from your backpack in combat, but like, it's funny. I'm always like, it takes an action to grab it. You know, it's cool to like nail it down that specific.
Yeah.
What else? Most walls are not dismissible. So this was a good one because I spent a lot of the episode tortured over dismissing this wall because I'm reading the rule live while we're on air. And the rule states couldn't be more clear that it'll say if it's dismissible.
It must be an effect you are allowed to dismiss as defined by the spell or item.
Very clear. However, I was tortured by it because every single spell I looked at did not say dismissible. I couldn't find a spell that was dismissible, which was very different from 1E, which like most spells were dismissible, I felt like. You know, like some spells weren't, most spells were.
And it was clear. There was a D in parentheses.
Right, exactly. So I was like, am I reading something wrong? Am I looking in the wrong place for where it says dismissible? And it turns out, no, I wasn't. Really, things are just not that dismissible in 2E. Like when you cast it, you better be ready to commit to the duration because it is staying, you know? So it's an important thing to know and something that I didn't realize. And I'm glad we know it now. Professor Eric mentioned an example. See chromatic wall. Chromatic wall was the example he threw up. It says right at the end, you can dismiss the spell.
There you go.
So, you know, there's a wall you can dismiss. So we could not dismiss the wall. I'm glad we didn't just hand wave it and say that we could because we totally couldn't. Let's see. There's maybe one more I want to get to before we get to my wounded.
Really excited, John, about wounded.
I am excited about that. He mentioned that the breath weapon would probably target the hazards as well. You know, if you want to get into that kind of bookkeeping,
sure.
But just something to keep in mind. He doesn't think it would hurt them enough to really affect the combat, but just something to keep in mind. And this was a good one. Troy should double check the attacks and range of the dragon's AOO. Most dragons can only AOO with certain attacks, and that might change how the ranges work. So, yeah,
for sure.
It's a good thing to know.
Like the tail had 15 feet of reach, the wing had 10 feet of reach, the claw had no reach.
And does it say what it can AOO with?
Attack of opportunity, jaws only.
There you go.
The jaws have 10 feet of reach. So I think I did that correctly.
Okay.
I'd have to go back and listen,
But you couldn't AOO with the tail from 15 feet. So no. That's something I didn't realize about dragons in 2E. So that's good to know.
Attack of opportunity, reaction, jaws only. But that's just this particular umbral dragon. Maybe a red dragon is really good with its tail and it can AOO.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. The way Eric laid it out is most dragons can only AOO with certain attacks. It seems
good
to be a theme. Yeah,
the professor.
It really is. Okay, now let's get into the wounded discussion. This came up in the episode, and it got a little heated because I pointed out that, and I had this just in a memory from playing 2E now for a couple of years, that magical healing does not remove the wounded condition, that only treat wounds removes the wounded condition. And there was a bit of a flare-up at the table. Matthew didn't like it. Skid didn't like it. You're telling me that if I sit and bandage someone with a mundane bandage, that is more effective than magical healing? Magical healing does not remove the wounded condition? This is stupid. The game is stupid. That was kind of the vibe that I got. Let's just go into it. We're going to dig into this discussion right now. Quote, right from the book, the wounded condition ends if someone successfully restores hit points to you with treat wounds, or if you are restored to full hit points and rest for 10 minutes. Okay, so that's the rule from the book. Magical healing does not help that. Magical healing also does not stop bleed in 2E. We've discussed this on the FOD. The only way you can get back from bleed is to be healed up to full. Another thing I did not know, battle medicine, which allows you to use treat wounds in an instant in combat, and it does not take the normal 10 minutes, does not clear the wounded condition. The only way you can clear the wounded condition is using the treat wounds, the 10-minute version. Now, why is that? Can I see Matthew and Skid's initial reaction, their point? Absolutely. Of course. It's magic. Including me being on Skid's side almost every time when he argues against things being
not real,
counterintuitive to common sense, right? Like just because they're a rule of the game, they're counterintuitive to common sense. And I tend to agree with him on most of those examples. And this feels like one of them. However, Professor Eric straightened me out. Sometimes you need to go to an academic, you know, to really get yourself straightened out. And he pointed out very simply why this is. It's very possible that it kind of breaks some immersion for you if that's the way you want to play. But at the end of the day, it is a game and it's still game design. And what you have to look at is what are the designers doing here and what were they thinking? What was the reason to not allow magical healing to remove the wounded condition? And the reason is they wanted to create a strategic, tactical change in the game that required prioritizing keeping characters conscious rather than allowing them to become unconscious and just bringing them back, which is what 1E kind of rewarded in a way. Because you would just be like, well, I don't really need to heal you until you are down. Then I can heal you and you're right back as if nothing had happened. There were no like downsides to this. So why waste my in-combat healing if there's a chance that they could miss and you could still just be up and it'll be fine, you know? And even if you go down, I'll just bring you up in the next round and you'll be fine. You know, we just have to avoid you getting massively hit, going below your con, that kind of thing. In that situation, yeah, we might heal you. But when we know it's just going to be just enough to bring you down, we just won't heal you until you're back up. This is a design choice that I really love. I think that it's awesome to say you cannot just go down and get up and go down and get up over and over again in combat and have that not impact you in a way that makes you more likely to permanently die. In general, that's what the wounded condition does. And in general, I've appreciated it from the beginning. The creation of the wounded condition from the first time I read it, I liked it because I was like, oh, this shows you that within a combat, you are... there's a real penalty for going unconscious and coming back and going unconscious and coming back. But the added layer that Professor Eric kind of explained that I just never kind of connected is that it's kind of the responsibility of a healer or of the character themselves to really fear going unconscious more than you did in 1E and to stay up. It incentivizes healing prior to unconsciousness than 1E did. And that is, it just basically is saying in the instance of combat, if you keep going down, you're going to be at higher risk of dying. And in order to remove that condition, you just need time and care and we'll clear up those wounds. But in the heat of the combat, you're going to be much more likely to permanently die. And I love it. I think it's a great design choice. And so that's why I'll kind of stick on the design end of things rather than on the common sense or reality or the way I think of magic in my interpretation end of things. Because it makes me think of World of Warcraft, my days of World of Warcraft. Like in those combats, which were very similar to these, you know, kind of at a larger scale, it was the healer's responsibility to keep those people up. Because if they went down at all, it was devastating to everybody. It was a real, real bad situation. And it was so fun to try to keep ahead of the damage that they're receiving from enemies and keep them conscious through that fight. I like that mechanic being in the game of Pathfinder 2E. As I head into Gatewalkers, I think a lot more about this. When I played with Amber Dye, they were very, very diligent about healing in combat when it made sense in order to not let people even get the wounded condition because it's so scary and because it's deadly. So, yeah, that's my little treatise on the wounded condition. I love it. I don't mind that magic doesn't heal it. And I love this kind of perspective going forward in that we're not going to just wipe away wounded so easily. We're going to know after digging into this that, like, once you're wounded, that's not going away at minimum until the encounter is over.
Right. And one thing that I'm realizing as I dig more and more into the rules is that the old way that I would try and, like, discourage, I got to fucking rest before every combat, discourage that, like, that just doesn't, I can't do that in 2E, you know what I mean? Like, I still don't think you should be getting eight hours rest before every encounter. That's a little ridiculous, but you definitely need to get yourselves as full as possible before you walk into the next room, because you're just the game is much more tactical, and you'll be fucked if somebody is like, I forgot to heal, so now it's on me. Do I be like, well, all right, let's heal after the fact. The thing is, if I don't do that, you may just die, and then it's like because you forgot. So it's going to be a real interesting learning curve for all of us, I think, especially as we get into higher levels of Strange Aeons and then we start Gatewalkers. Like, where do we draw the line? Like, do you have to just be on top of that? And I think I should be part of that. Like, do you guys want to do any more healing? And not just, like, try and catch you off
guard. Well, Skid is usually pretty good about it. Skid's really good about it, actually. Role playing his injuries after an encounter. Like, I always think of him, he does a really good job of being like, I'm very badly hurt. Right, exactly. He does a really good job of bringing that up. And yeah, it's in a fun and funny way, but it reminds you after these encounters that, like, maybe you need to recoup for a little bit. You need to sit down and you need to, you know, work on these wounds. And I think we're going to get more and more in the groove of that and have it happen faster. And, and have it, I don't want to talk too much about Blood of the Wild for people who haven't listened yet, because some of this stuff is kind of spoilery, but, like, we're getting better at that, you know, between combat healing in a way that is efficient and effective and doesn't mean 8 hours of rest between every encounter. Mm. But at the end of the day, these encounters really are built for the players to walk in at full hit points. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what's expected. So, because of the design of the game. So you really do kind of have to figure out ways to make that happen. And we just don't have a party well built for that in Strange Aeons, but that's all going to change at Gatewalkers, dude. We are going to be so on it.
Yeah. Very, I mean, we haven't even started and you're already, I can tell you guys are much more in sync right out the gate on how to do this. And some interesting ways, I think, by the end of book 3 of Strange Aeons, how I may be offering some tweaks. I'm definitely changing some parts of the adventure to kind of suit what we're doing here. So I'm excited to get to that because we're fast approaching the end of book 3.
It is imminent. It's imminent. Well, that's it. A huge thank you to Professor Eric this week. That was a chunky episode, a lot going on. And thank you. I mean, the detail in his breakdown here was really great. So thank you so much for that. And we're going to have Professor Eric in Gatewalkers, which I'm really excited for. Hopefully at lower levels, we're a little bit tighter and we see less need of this kind of stuff. But it's been such a great experience so far for these first 5 months, coming up on 6 months here. Of getting these notes and just learning. So big thank you again to Professor Eric for all of his help.
Oh yeah.
That's going to wrap it up, buddy. I'm good. Fod. Yeah. Good fod. I was going to say tight fod, but it was actually kind of long, but that's because we were just having too much fun. Always a good time, hanging out with you, buddy. And, looking forward to hopping on a flight to St. Paul. So, looking forward to see the St. Paul Nash very soon.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun... show week is always fun. I hate leaving my family and my kids, but I am excited to get on the road and get in front of the Nash.
Get in front of the Nash. We're coming back, St. Paul! Get ready, everybody. All right, we're going to have a great time in St. Paul and Asheville. We'll see all of you soon, and we'll be back with more fodder next week. Later, everybody!
Skidamarinky-doo!
Thanks for listening to the Glass Cannon Network. For more podcasts and live streams, visit glasscannonnetwork.com. And for exclusive shows and content you can't find anywhere else, subscribe today at patreon.com/glasscannon.